what you are basically. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence itself.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mind Podcast, episode number 54. For today's show, we have one of the most important episodes I think I have ever made, as we're going to be talking about the yuga cycle. And I have on the show an expert who has written a fantastic book called Yuga Shift, which lays out precisely where we are in the greatest cycle of them all. Now, this has been called many things by many civilizations. The Greeks, they called it the Great Year. The Mayans, the Great Cycle. In the East, it was called the Yuga Cycle. But they all had the exact same perspective. All civilizations throughout history have been warning us about this great cycle, telling us we have to get prepared for it, but it lasts many thousands of years. It actually goes through large epochs of time, and each of the epochs is essentially one of four seasons. Just like all of nature, there is a spring, a summer, an autumn, and a winter. Or as the Greeks laid it out, we have an Iron Age, a Bronze Age, a Silver Age, and then the fabled Golden Age. Now, as we move away from the lowest age, which is the Iron Age, or the Kali Yuga, as the Eastern traditions called it. And that age is characterized by precisely what we're seeing right now. So it's people falling away from God, having very low morality. All of the evil becomes acceptable. It becomes the norm. We've got great tyrants who arise and they seek to control the masses. But then after around 3,000 years, the next age starts to come in. New energies arise and we start to regain some of our virtue. But first, all of the corruption and the rot of the previous age has to be washed away. And that happens through great cataclysms. So my guest tonight, Bibu, he's an expert on this cycle. And he's calculated through his extensive research that we are literally on the turning point from the Kali Yuga or the Iron Age into the next age. But like I said, this is not going to come easily. There's going to be a transition period, and he believes that begins in 2025 and we'll have a series of cataclysms. So this is an extremely important episode, and we're going to discuss all of the above, because whether Bibu is right or wrong on the time frame, I think we can all agree that big changes are happening here and something is coming at us fast. So I'm going to leave it there for the introduction. Members, please head over to parallelmike.com to listen to the full episode. In closing, I hope you're all well, healthy and reasonably happy, and like always, I'll see each and every one of you in the next one. Hi everybody, welcome to the Parallel Mike Podcast. We are joined today by a very special guest coming to us from India. It's Bibu Dev Misra. Bibu is a scholar and an author specializing in a very important cycle, which is the Yuga cycle, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Now, listeners, you'll all know that I'm extremely interested in cycles of all kinds, and I personally believe that we are actually at the culmination of some massive cycles, and we're seeing profound changes here on Earth because of it. We're seeing this play out in the financial realm, astrologically, in terms of civilization and empire. So we're going to try and make sense of that tonight with Bibu, because he's got a very important piece of the cycles puzzle, which I don't think many people have heard before. But first and foremost, Bibu, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Mike. Thanks for inviting me for this podcast. I'm sure we're going to have a very interesting discussion.
I think so too. I think it's going to be extremely enlightening, maybe a little bit scary for some listeners, but I think you deliver it with a hopeful tone to the message, which I'm glad, because it can be quite shocking. And let's begin, Bibu, by just talking about the Yuga cycle. Can you just lay out for listeners that don't know what it is, where it comes from and what it looks like?
Well, it's a view of the past and a view of the future that most ancient cultures shared. So they didn't think that our consciousness or our civilization went upwards in a linear fashion. They believed in a cycle, in cyclical fluctuations of consciousness. So at the high point of that cycle, you're in a golden age when there's purity and truthfulness everywhere. Every person is kind of saintly And the environment also reflects that. So the state of the environment is much more, you don't have these kind of natural catastrophes that you have today. Diseases weren't supposed to be prevalent in those days. And then you go down a curve. So you basically start moving towards more degraded forms of civilization. The environment reflects that. And finally, you reach a phase called the Kali Yuga or the Iron Age, which is where we are right now, when what you see outside is a lot of lies and propaganda and greed and selfishness. And that kind of becomes our way of life. And we kind of get used to it. And we start thinking that perhaps this is how it has been all along. And there wasn't really a utopian time, which is what most academics and scholars tell us, that it's all a fantasy and there wasn't a time like that. But what I found out through my research is that that's wrong. In fact, there are academic researches, academic papers published in well-known journals, which show that what the ancients told us about these cycles is actually real and factual and based on experience.
So, just to lay out really simply for listeners, Bibo, and then we can get into it on a deeper level. Essentially, it's these four ages, isn't it? The Greeks spoke about it in the Platonic era, which was the iron, the bronze, the silver, and then the golden age. And yet, you're coming at this from an Eastern tradition. So, this is how it would be. Would it be right in saying, Bibo, this is a Hindu concept to begin with, but it's actually seen across different civilizations? Or is it just generically Eastern that it's been there all along in the East?
No, I don't think it belongs to any specific religion or culture or nation. This is how our ancestors all over the world looked at how civilizations rose and fell. The Greeks had their own ideas about the great year or the Platonic year. The Hopis had a cycle of four worlds, and according to their belief systems, we are right now in the fourth world, which is the last world and the worst of the lot. And then the Aztecs had four previous suns, which is the same concept basically of four ages. The Persians have a cycle which is very similar to the Hindu one. They believe in a 12,000 year cycle, which is divided into four ages. And then of course you have the Hindu one. The Indian one became more famous because a lot of our Asian stories are tied up with the Yuga cycle. So let's say I'm talking about Indian epic like the Mahabharata or the Ramayana. Automatically I'm talking about a higher age. I'm talking about the Silver Age or the Treta Yuga as we call it. Or when I'm talking about the Mahabharata, I'm talking about the Dwapara Yuga or the Bronze Age. So even now in India, people, when they talk about our legends or our past stories, they talk in terms of the Yuga cycle. Whereas in the West, with the onset of the Industrial Revolution and with the scientific advancements of the last 200 centuries, the Greek stories and the legends, they became regarded as just myths and nothing more. So it's not a part of the historical discourse in the West. But in India, that idea is still alive. But the problem in India is that the cycles became inflated to very large numbers, which doesn't make sense in the context of our known history. So that is a problem that we have in India. Whereas in the rest of the world, people mostly, at least in the scientific and academic cycles, circles, don't think of it as a factual, a rational scientific doctrine.
And by your estimation, Bibu, the Yuga cycle goes from this descending golden age for 12,000 years all the way down to the bottom, which is where you think we are now. And then it has 12,000 years on the other side, ascending back up with transition periods between. And that's the really interesting part, actually, which I think is probably the most shocking part, is that those transitions can actually have all kinds of cataclysmic events, which we're going to really cover in depth in part two, hopefully. But just in part one, Bibu, how did you come about coming to that 24,000 year cycle? Because, like you said in your book, you mentioned that some people have posited it to be millions and millions of years. And I mean, it's actually hard to fathom millions of years. I can just about get my head around a 24,000 year cycle. And it does make sense to me too, because we've got 24 hours in a day, we've got 12 seasons, we've got the 24,000 year precession through the equinoxes, which is 24 to 25,000. And you say that actually that could fit squarely in it as well, which I'd like to ask you about a bit later. But how did you come about the 24,000 year time frame, Bibu? And where did all of the confusion come from? Was it accidental or was it purposeful?
Well, actually, the first time I read about the 24,000 year cycle was in the writings of an Indian saint called Sri Yukteswar, who was the guru of Paramahansa Yogananda, who was a very famous ascetic and very well known in the West. And he said that the yuga cycle was of 12,000 years initially, and then it was multiplied and it was made bigger. And what he posited was what you just said, that there's a 12,000 year descending cycle when virtue or human consciousness is on a decline. And then there's another 12,000 year ascending cycle when our virtue is on an is continuously improving every day, and which is in turn reflected in the state of our environment. And that made a lot of sense to me, because I had also been brought up with the idea that the yuga cycles are of humongous durations of stretching into 4 million years or so. So that really struck me. And then when I started looking into other cultures, because you see, the yuga cycle is not, as I mentioned earlier, not the exclusive property of any religion or nation or culture. I started looking at the Persians. Persians believed in a 12,000-year cycle. Then I looked at the Greeks. The Greeks had two primary values. One was a 12,952-year cycle, which was, I think, favored by Cicero. And then there was a 10,800-year cycle, as per Heraclitus. So anyway, those two numbers are both very close to that 12,000 year mark. So I started thinking that yeah, this number makes sense. It makes sense in the context of our known history, and it also matches with the other cultures. You can't have a different yuga cycle for the Greeks and one for the Persians and one for India. There can be only one cycle for the whole world, if at all there's a cycle. And then I saw that there are a couple of Indian texts, the Mahabharata, which is one of our primary epics, and the Laws of Manu, which is again a very important ritualistic text. Both of them have a yuga cycle duration of 12,000 years. But in some other texts, which became more popular over time, that was multiplied by 360 to get that big number of around 4 million years. And the reason why this multiplication was done was twofold. First of all, people who were living around the beginning of the Christian era, they thought that the Kali Yuga should have been over, because one of the starting points of the Kali Yuga was 3102 BC, and they thought that we should have already finished the Kali Yuga, and then but still not over, because they forgot this ascending and descending cycle, and they thought that the 3000 year Kali Yuga or the 1200 year Kali Yuga should have been over by now. But it's not over, because the misery that we see around us today and the darkness and the ignorance, it all shows that we're still in the Kali Yuga. So they multiplied that number by 360. And they said that every year of the 12,000 year cycle is a year of the gods. And a year of the gods is equivalent to 360 years of of humans. So in order to convert this 12,000 year cycle of the gods into a cycle of the humans, you need to multiply it by 360. And so you ended up with this 4,330,000 years odd number. And that was a mathematical manipulation. It's very clear, because you still have some texts where you don't have that inflated value, which basically tells you that it must have been inflated at a later duration. And this is the number that a lot of Indians still believe in. They think that the Kali Yuga is actually 432,000 years duration, and we are just at the beginning of the Kali Yuga. So that's a problem that we have here in India.
Oh, and what did you find, Bibu, when you was looking at other cultures that corroborated the 12,000 year cycle? Was there any evidence historically where people have written down about this cycle, say in Greece or Rome or anywhere like this, that corroborated the 12,000 year rather than this epic multi-million year cycle?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, Plato spoke about the sinking of Atlantis. And according to Plato, the information about Atlantis was brought by Solon, who had gone to Egypt and spoken to the priests out there. And Plato said that Atlantis had submerged at the around 9,000 years before the time of Solon. Now, Solon lived at around 600 BCE, so which means Atlantis would have sunk at around 9,600 BCE, which is around the same time that the Ice Age had come to an end. And so Plato believed that it was prior to 9,600 BC that we had the Golden Age on our planet. So that kind of tells you that the cycle is much shorter. Because if you had the golden age at around, let's say, 10,000 BC, that means the 12,000 year cycle is about to end now, at around 2000 AD. And similarly, the Persians, they say that their creator god is called Ahura Mazda. And Ahura Mazda had recreated the world around 9,000 years prior to the time of Zoroaster, who was the Persian prophet and started the Zoroastrian religion. And Zoroaster, according to most academics, lived between the 6th and the 7th centuries BCE. So if you add 9,000 to that, again, you end up with that same timeline that between 9,600 to 9,700 BCE. That was the time that the world was recreated by Ahura Mazda. And that was also the time that the Ice Age came to an end. And we entered into this warm Holocene period, which is dramatically different from the life that than the temperature conditions that existed prior to 9,600 BC. So there was a renewal of civilization at around 9,600 BC, and both the Greeks and the Persians believed that prior to that, we had the golden age on Earth, which tells you that the cycle has to be much shorter than it can't be those million years cycle. It has to be much shorter.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating, Bipu. You're actually talking about that we still today don't know what caused that shift in climate. There was a cooling period and then it just got warm all of a sudden. And it was around 12,000 years ago, which would, if you're correct in dating the cycle, then that would literally be at the very end of the last cycle. That would be during the transition. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I had written in my article that the end of the Ice Age marked the beginning of the descending cycle. So we have been in the descending cycle of consciousness since 9,600 BCE. And we are now approaching the end of that descending cycle because it's nearly 12,000 years since the time that the Ice Age had ended. And what I also said is that each yuga is of 3,000 years duration. So 3,000 into 4 is 12,000. This is also the value that the Persians had adopted. But 3,000 is the out of those 3,000 years, you have a transitional period of 300 years between the yugas. So every yuga is effectively of 2,700 years duration, which is followed by a 300-year period of transition. And so in 2025, which is the next year, that's the time that my calculations led me to believe is the time that we end the descending cycle, and that's when the period of transition begins.
Wow, so that's
So,
literally next year. You think that is the end of this massive cycle begins next year?
and thing is that a lot of people think that just because the Kali Yuga or the Iron Age is going to end, the world is going to end in 2025. But that's not what happens. The real changes begin to manifest during the period of transition after a yuga. So it's after 2025 that you might see that the changes in our financial, in our environmental, geopolitical, those situations are getting worse because as soon as we enter the period of transition, it becomes topsy-turvy. And it eventually leads us to many things, social revolutions, wars, and eventually very large power forces of nature come into play.
So this seems to be lining up a lot with smaller cycles as well. Is that part of it, or is that just coincidence? I'm thinking of things like the solar cycle. We're meant to be going into a cooling period now, or a mini ice age. I think it's Zach over in the UK. She's not a British national, but she's at university over there. I think it might be Derby, and she did a lot of work on the solar cycle. And she said that beginning about 2019, 2020 would start to transition towards this really low sunspot activity period where we'd have lots of cool weather, and it could actually take seasons out of it, our growing season. It could lead to famines across the northern hemisphere, all of this stuff that kind of is coming to the fore. And then when I look at things like the financial world, and we've got this big debt cycle, and it looks like the global debt bomb's about to burst, and there's just so many things kind of lining up, Bibu. Is that all a part of the Kali Yuga cycle, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, because we have been acquiring a lot of negative karma over the Kali Yuga, and all of that is coming to a culmination as we come to the end of this cycle. And a lot of things are coming out in the open now. People are seeing things for what they really are, which is why a lot of people are also waking up to the illusion. And a lot of people are not, because Kali Yuga is the time when, see, consciousness itself is a pyramid. So you have people at very high states of consciousness. You have people at very low states of consciousness. And Kali Yuga is the time that a lot of people have their first few incarnations as humans. Because as Hindus and Buddhists, we believe that we evolve from the state of animals to the state of humans. And then we gradually perfect ourselves as human beings. And ultimately, we break out of the cycle of birth and rebirth. And we turn into angels and gods, because that's our ultimate destiny as human beings. And Kali Yuga is the time when a lot of people have their first few human incarnations, which is why you see so much greed and selfishness and violent behavior, which is not acceptable in the higher yugas. So yeah, as we come to the end of this cycle, I think a lot of these things will start coming out. People will realize that there's a lot of lies, which is kind of covering up the truth. And there's also going to be a effort on the part of people to reclaim their lost knowledge and the lost heritage, which has been suppressed to a large extent during the Kali Yuga. So all of that stuff is going to happen. The economic bubbles are going to burst. And then you already see the beginnings of war and unrest in so many parts of the world today. And that is something that regularly happens in a yuga ending period. That is, there's always an onset of a big global war at the end of a yuga. And when I read the Indian epics like the Mahabharata or the Ramayana, both of which were situated at the end of their respective yugas, we saw that there are big global wars in which so many people were involved. And that is something that I feel is already starting to manifest itself right now. And there's a change in the energy balance of our planet during these yuga ending periods. And what that does is that it kind of makes people immune to any kind of logic or argument. And there's very little you can do by means of logic or argument or persuasion. So it kind of takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because if we look at it as a 2,700 year long Kali Yuga, then if you zoom out, you can say that the ending would have seen a lot more wars, because we live now, Bibble, and we think, well, 100 years ago is a long time ago, but it's actually not if you're looking at it from the cycle. So I guess the ending of the Kali Yuga could encompass the Cold War, World War II, World War I, the Hundred Years' War, the Anglo-Dutch Wars, the French Revolution. All of that would actually sit in the end of the Kali Yuga. So it makes sense that, you know, because some people might argue, well, why World War III and not World War II? And I guess if you zoom out, no, it's all together. The last 300 years of the Kali Yuga cycle would be filled with big global wars, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you mentioned all of those wars and so much of destruction of native cultures and during the period of colonialism. That was also something that happened towards the end of this cycle, right? So yeah, it gradually builds up. And you think that with the end of the Cold War or with the end of the Second World War, we moved into an era of peace. But this is only a very short duration of peace. And already we can see how that is getting ripped up right now across the world. And I feel that post-2025, things are going to get even worse, which actually is bad news for people who are hoping for things to get better. But unfortunately, it doesn't. Towards the yuga ending period, things just keep on sliding downwards. It keeps on getting worse. And ultimately, you have to kind of attune yourself to the yuga that is on the way and kind of give up, tune out of the energies of the yuga that you're living in.
Okay, Bibble, before we depress ourselves and go down that, that track of cataclysm, I'm going to pull us back for a second and I'll save that for a little bit. But I do hope that we can actually think of some ideas as well as to, at least spiritually, how we can combat some of the things that we're going to be facing. But let's just back up a second, because I really want to kind of understand how you managed to crack the code on the yuga. What is it that makes you think, Bibu, that your new redefining of the transitions and of the yuga lens is the accurate one? Is there evidence that we can draw on from history that aligns with this cycle? And maybe you could just lay out that cycle just one more time. It's 2,700 years and a 300-year transition. And Also, actually, I'll ask that later. I don't want to flood you with too many questions. But yeah, I'll just leave it there, Bibu. Is there anything from history that aligns with this that we can draw on to say, yes, this is the right timeline we've now got?
Yeah, when I came up with this timeline, I used a calendar that was used in ancient India called the Cycle of the Seven Sages or the Saptarshi calendar. And this calendar has a cycle duration of 2,700 years. And the seven sages are very important aspect of Hindu tradition because we believe that all the knowledge and wisdom that we have as Indians or as Hindus came to us from the seven sages. And as I've mentioned in my book, the tradition of the seven sages was known across the world. So it's not as if the seven sages came only to India. They went to Mesopotamia, to Australia, and to a lot of other places, to America. And so this calendar has a cycle of 2,700 years, and it was used extensively in India in the ancient times. So I thought that this is the right calendar to track the yuga cycle. So if 2,700 years is the duration of a yuga, then the remaining 300 years out of the 3,000-year duration has to be the period of transition. That was the premise that I worked with. And then I realized that each of these periods of transition, when we look backwards, was associated with a global collapse of civilization. And that was followed by a re-emergence of civilization all over the world. For instance, right now, we're ending the Kali Yuga in 2025. The previous transition was from 976 BC to 676 BC, as per this timeline. And that is when you can see that all of these Bronze Age civilizations across the world, in Greece, in the Mycenaean civilization, in the Indus Valley civilization, Egypt as well, because Egypt was never ruled by Egyptian kings after 600 BC. So all of these civilizations, all the ancient Bronze Age civilizations, they all collapsed at around 1000 BCE. That's what they call as the late Bronze Age collapse. That's the term that they use in academia. And then that was followed by the emergence of the Iron Age civilizations in Greece, Persia, India, everywhere you look at around 600 BCE. So that time period from 600 to 1000 BCE was a time of collapse and re-emergence. And then when I looked backwards even further, and when I looked at the time period from 3900 to 3600 BC, I saw that all the Bronze Age civilizations started at around 3600, 3500 BC. That was a time that Egyptian civilization, the pre-dynastic part of the Egyptian civilization, that was when it started. That was when the dynastic period of Mesopotamia started. The Indus Valley civilization also started at around 3400 BC. And then what happened to the civilizations prior to that? They all disappeared. We don't have any trace of the pre-Egyptian civilization or the pre-Indus Valley civilizations. I mean, we can find traces of it if we dig deep enough, but more or less they have been destroyed and covered up by many feet of mud. So, and then when I go back to 9600 BC, which is the beginning of this cycle, that was when the Ice Age ended. We find that at Göbekli Tepe, around 9600 BC, they started building these megalithic sites with large monumental stone blocks, which means they were kind of bringing forward the knowledge and skills from an earlier civilization, which was destroyed during the period of cataclysm towards the end of the last ice age. So every 3,000 years, you find that there's a new wave of civilization, and the older ones disappear with very little traces. So that was when I became convinced that this timeline that I came up with is reflected in the archaeological, historical, and geological records. It's not something that I'm inventing. Anybody who looks at the timeline and looks at the previous civilizations of the world, they'll see that there is a trend, the archaeological records of civilizations disappearing every 2,700 years, and then again reappearing after a period of cataclysm. But the new civilizations that come up, they seem to have a very different kind of artistic, technological expressions. They don't have the same artistic styles or the same cultural beliefs as the civilizations prior to them. There's kind of a renewal which happens when this new phase begins. And then in my book, I have added to that, maybe we can come to it later, I've shown that there's also been a degradation of the human physical structure over the past 12,000 years. We've become smaller physically. And our cranial volume which is a measure of our intelligence, that has also shrunk by around 10% since the end of the last ice age. So we tend to think that we are the most intelligent species of humans that ever lived, and that is completely wrong. We're neither physically compatible, or we don't match up to our ice age ancestors, either in terms of our physical strength or physical size, or in terms of our brain size. So we are inferior to them in both respects. And that's what the yuga cycle doctrine also tells us, that when we are in a descending cycle, our physical size and energy and our intelligence and memory, all of that decline.
Yeah, and it feels like for most of my life, Bibhu, I've just been sat questioning how the narratives that they give us about history could be true, because they tell us we're at the peak of civilization. And then you look at things like the monoliths, like you mentioned, like the Great Pyramid of Giza, which has got 2.5 million blocks weighing, I don't know, they say 5 to 20 tons at the largest, and it was moved by slaves, and they were moving these blocks apparently thousands of miles sometimes to get them from the quarry, and it just makes no sense. And yet that's the nonsense that they give us, Bibu. But there's so much evidence out there, isn't there, that these old civilizations had technologies that were far in advance of what we've got today. We can't replicate it. Their astrologers were the greatest that ever lived. We can't recreate their knowledge of astronomy or astrology, even using telescopes. They didn't have telescopes, and they knew at least as much as we do. So I find it very hard to believe that we are on this linear timeline. I've always felt like there's something missing. Do you think that's by purpose, that they've, because we're in the Kali Yuga, they're lying to us, they're trying to keep the knowledge for themselves somehow to stop us from understanding these cycles?
Yeah, they like to pretend. I think the entire academic community, they like to pretend that we are at the pinnacle of civilization. And I don't know, maybe that makes them feel happy, because Charles Darwin, was one of those scholars or thinkers of the colonial period, who started this whole idea of a linear growth in civilization. And Darwin said that the whole idea, Darwin was aware of the yuga cycle. He said that the whole idea that humans are degrading over time is such a depressing idea. And it's much more cheerful to think that we are progressing upwards in a linear fashion. And that was it. He didn't need to provide any kind of archaeological or historical justification like we have to do now, because once a theory like that has been propagated for two centuries and repeated endlessly by people, it's very hard to dislodge it. Then you have to come up with reams and reams of evidence to justify why it is not so, why it cannot be so. And like you said, the architectural capabilities of the Asians, which is reflected in so many ancient sites around the world, their ability to lift, work with large blocks of stone and kind of fit them together without using mortar, almost as if they have been softened or melted prior to being stitched together. And that is just one of the many facets of the civilization. And we have to remember that inventing the kind of technologies that we have now is not necessarily a good thing, because a lot of the technologies that we have today, it does a lot of damage to the environment. We have made a mess of the environment in the last 200 years. And if it carries on like this, I mean, the Earth might pretty much become unlivable in another couple of hundred years. And then it also does a lot of damage to our consciousness, because people become addicted to so many kinds of technologies, and they start neglecting the growth of their social or their mental or their spiritual sides. So, and then you have all these weapons of war, which always seems to fall into the wrong hands, and it causes so much suffering and distress in so many places of the world. So our technology is not really a very good thing in many respects. And in the higher yugas, you wouldn't have technologies that would cause any kind of damage to the environment or to the human consciousness. They would have technologies that are in alignment with the energies of the yuga. They wouldn't devise anything that takes people away from developing their inner environment to develop themselves spiritually. They wouldn't do anything that would prevent people or hamper their spiritual growth. They would only do things that are in harmony with the environment and with our consciousness. So we are going to find, so if you look for technologies of the higher egos, we are not going to find the kind of technologies that we have today. We're going to find a different set of technologies. And we don't really understand what those technologies are, because we have forgotten about them. We've forgotten those skills. And those skills kind of disappear during these periods of yuga transition, these very cataclysmic periods. Those skills disappear. And when you are on a descending cycle, then it's very difficult to come up with them again. So what happened in our case is that we had to reinvent, starting from the 18th century onwards, we had to reinvent some new kind of technologies using which we are getting a glimpse of what happened in the past, but we are not being able to make full sense of what actually happened. And like you mentioned, astrology, how did they figure out the kind of effect that the energies of the planets and the suns have on our life pattern or on our consciousness? I mean, you don't see those energies. How do you figure them out? And then yoga. Yoga is also a science which people do not know how somebody could have devised a science like that, because yoga is also based on invisible energy flowing through your meridians or your nadis, and how simple poses like yoga can help in reducing your stress or increasing your immunity. That is something we haven't yet been able to figure out. So the ancients were very good at working with invisible energy, with magnetism, electromagnetism, and they did it in a manner which was not harmful to the environment. Astrology is not harmful to the environment. Yoga is not harmful to the environment. So they use those kind of technologies and not the ones that we have today.
Yeah, and I imagine that they would have been dispersed fairly amongst the populace. So today we've got these synthetic technologies. I'm guessing back then it would have been natural, and the synthetic ones require us all to be dependent on centralized structures. So, you know, you've got big oil with the Rockefellers, and now they've got a monopoly on the oil, and all of the products will be made from oil, but you don't get to dig the oil. They get to dig the oil, and you've got to buy the products off them. And it's the same with everything today. Our food now is going to go from being natural to synthetic if they get their way. So that is the monopolization of Earth's resources. And it sounds to me like the golden age, everyone has a higher spiritual tuning, and therefore they can access energies that don't require us to tear apart nature. We actually work with maybe sound energy, or I don't know because I haven't been there, but I can guess, I can imagine what they'd use, maybe seismic energy, and they can move these blocks around, and it's nothing to them. It's using sound or energy. So it's interesting because it feels to me like everything you're saying lines up. And I guess one thing that confuses me about all of this is right now it seems like there's two things going on. I feel like there is an energetic change happening, and I know a lot of people are feeling that. And I'd like to ask your opinion on some of the things that people are telling me, like dreams that have started to appear where they've never had vivid dreams before. Now all of a sudden they're having what feels like prophetic dreams, dreams of catastrophe and disaster. I've had that quite a lot recently. But also it feels like, as well as this natural change, there's also a simultaneous synthetic change, and that these people who have ruled over the Kali Yuga, these people who have had debt slavery, who enacted colonialism, who raped the planet of all its wealth and destroyed these civilizations, these knowledgeable ancient civilizations, it's almost like they're trying to trap us in the Kali Yuga. Like they actually want us to stay here. Does that make sense to you, Bibo?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Kali Yuga is the time when these kind of people can rule over the rest of us. That's the time when the greedy and the selfish and the powerful and the violent people, they rule over the rest of humanity. And they're obviously going to try to retain their power for as long as possible. But thing is that right now we don't have a single cabal. Right now the cabal is actually broken up into multiple cabals all over the world. And what you might see going forward is that each of these factions will start to vie for a greater share of the pie. So they'll try to increase their sphere of influence, and they will fight between themselves. We won't have any say. You'll just stand there and watch helplessly, because it's ultimately between these big factions who want to vie for more and more power and more wealth. And the reason why is very evident is because this is also what happened in the previous yugas. When I read the Mahabharata, I saw the same pattern that the people became so self-centered with their own power that they did not really care, even if there was a big war and so many people lost their lives. That doesn't matter anymore. I think they're trying to hold on to their power as long as possible. But once we cross that 2025 threshold, we'll see that they're coming to conflict with each other, and they're kind of going to destroy each other before the comments start coming.
They know, Bibu, that it's coming. They must have their own occultists and astrologers and all kinds of and practices that they do behind the scenes to keep a track of these cycles. I mean, really what they've done is hidden the cycles from us and weaponized the cycles, because they know when we're going to a solar minimum or maximum, and they can then say, right, we're going to plan something for that time when that energy is coming in. And we don't know about it because we're given this dead materialism. We're told that nothing's worth nothing. Everything's meaningless. Just go out and consume. Whilst when we actually look at what they're doing, it seems like they've got belief structures, however dark they might be. So do you think that they know it's coming? And if so, what signs do you see that they know it's coming? Because we often hear about them building bunkers and going off to the Arctic, all this kind of conspiracy. But also, it does seem like they're not hiding away. They're continuing with all these agendas. So are they aware it's coming? Do they know it's coming? And do you see any signs of that? Or do you think that they're going to be caught up in it and they have no idea? It's like going to be a surprise for them as well.
Well, I think they have some idea about what's coming, not necessarily in terms of the ending of the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, not necessarily in terms of the Yuga cycle, but they have a lot of scientists who work for them, and they're probably getting a lot of scientific data which is not disclosed in the public domain. And that might be telling them that we are, you know, the condition of the environment is deteriorating, and you know, the ocean temperatures are increasing, and maybe more cosmic rays are coming in, which we don't know about. Maybe there's some new kind of energy which is coming in, which we don't know about. So they could be hiding a lot of scientific data from us, which they have with them. That's one part of it. And the second is they might be already preparing for a big war. I mean, and that's pretty evident. I mean, if you read the some of the headlines, not the mainstream headlines, but some of the alternative newspapers headlines, then it seems to me that a lot of these leaders are constantly talking about a big war coming up, and they're kind of preparing for it, which is probably why they're building those bunkers, because they've kind of decided to take us to Armageddon.
They're actually calling it here in Europe now. This is the mainstream term the politicians use, the pre-war era. They say, they literally say we live in the pre-war era, almost like it's a threat. Like, you know, they're telling us we're taking you to war, whether you like it or not.
Exactly. That's what I said, that the energy balance changes so dramatically during these yoga ending periods that they don't listen to any kind of logic anymore. I think what happens is that some of these people, they reincarnate in every yoga ending period to take us to that particular Armageddon. I mean, they're kind of programmed to do what they're doing right now, because it keeps happening every time we end a yoga. Similarly, a lot of us might have reincarnated in some of the higher yugas. And so we feel that the energetics are changing, the something is going on, a big shift is underway. So there are both kinds of people, the people who are taking us to war, and then there are people who understand that a big shift is underway, and they're trying to find out what is happening and tell the people about it. So it's both ways, I think.
Wow, that's so interesting to imagine that they just keep getting reincarnated as these awful people. It's like they never escape it. They just come back as it again and again.
It's pretty sad if you think about it, because, I mean, they don't really, you might think they have a lot of power, but do they have a lot of happiness or satisfaction or contentment? I don't think so. So I kind of feel sorry for those guys who are trapped in this kind of a programmatic way of thinking. And don't seem to really have the kind of free will that comes with being a more spiritual person.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Bibu. I always think about it, and I feel like me and you are more free than the politicians, for sure. Like, we can have a conversation like this. We can choose how we are. We can choose where we go. But these people, it feels like they're trapped, because even when a politician, say, for example, in the UK, you get someone like Tony Blair, they disappear and then they get brought back in. It's like a revolving door. Mario Draghi in Italy, they always get brought. We've just in Poland, where I live, Donald Tusk, he goes off and then he comes back. And it's almost like they're bound to, well, you could say bound to the devil or something evil, but they don't get to leave. Whereas at least we get to choose our destiny. And I don't think they get a choice. I think they have to continue doing what they're doing, whether they like it or not. Maybe they've made a deal or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I think they're kind of programmed to do this. They don't really have free choice.
No, I don't think so either. So in part one, I really want to just lay out the foundations of this one. So in part two, we can kind of get more specific. But can you tell us a little bit more about the transitions then, Bibu? You say that the 300 years, does every transition between each yuga have cataclysm? And is that always marked with a massive loss of human life?
Yes, it is. Let's talk about the last one, when we went from the Bronze Age civilization to the Iron Age, and which in the Yuga cycle means the transition from the descending Kali Yuga to the ascending Kali Yuga. That was the time that all the Indus Valley civilization disappeared, the Mesopotamian civilization disappeared. Egypt had went through a really rough time, and it was run over by the Kushites, for social disintegration, famines. And there was huge loss of civilization because when the new cultures came up, either in Greece or India, the population was significantly reduced. The same thing happened even in the Bronze Age, when the Bronze Age civilizations came up around 3500, 3600 BC. The population in those initial times was much lower. And we see that because the cities expanded over time. The initial cities were much smaller, and over time the cities become bigger and evolve into much larger cities. And then when you read the texts and or the belief systems of the ancient people, for instance, the Hopi, they have a very well-defined theory about the four previous worlds. And what they say is that every time humans become very selfish and they don't respect the creator anymore, they don't love each other anymore, there's a lot of infighting and discord, that is when the god Sotuknang, I think the creator god is called Sotuknang, he decides to end that particular civilization. And then some righteous people are selected for survival, and then they are guided to the underground homes of the ant people. And I think the ant people refers to the race of dwarfs that are mentioned in so many ancient cultures, the leprechauns or the dwarfs, or in India, we call them yakshas. They're supposed to live underground in caves and caverns, which are lighted up, and they have a lot of wealth and riches. I think the ant people refers to that because it also matches with some elements of Mayan belief systems, which I'll talk about later. So the main thing is that some people are always selected for survival, and those are the people that the gods or the people who control these cycles, they believe should remain alive to take forward the skills to the next cycle. So yeah, some people survive, a lot of people don't survive. Those who survive, they take forward the skills and the knowledge from the previous yuga, and then they're given a new set of guidances for the new yuga, because the energy of every yuga is different. The energy of the Kali Yuga is different from the energy of the Dwapara Yuga. What was possible in the Dwapara Yuga, you can't do that in the Kali Yuga anymore. So in Kali Yuga, if you look at the prophets who reincarnate in the Kali Yuga, like Buddha, Mahavira Jain, and then Jesus, they all spoke about meditation, about calmness, about meditations, about love for neighbors. They didn't talk about building empires and, you know, becoming great donors and stuff like that. So Kali Yuga is a time when you focus more on the inner world, because the outer world becomes so topsy-turvy and so kind of illogical that you don't want to spend too much effort trying to build empires. All the people eventually end up doing that. But the message was that you must focus on the inner development and try to shut off your mind from the distractions of the outer world. So these are the messages that came up in the Kali Yuga. Similarly, every yuga, at the beginning of the yuga, you would have, and here's the interesting thing, the higher yugas were a time when the doorways between the dimensions was open. Now we think of the gods and the sages, or the giants and the dwarves, or the elves and the fairies as mythical beings. But if you look at the belief system of cultures around the world, they all tell us that they used to interact with the gods, they used to interact with the seven sages and the divine sages. They used to interact with these dwarf gods who used to give them a lot of skills, and but they were also gods of fertility. And I think what happens at the beginning of the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, is that these doorways get blocked up. And over a period of time, we start thinking that these are just stories that people across the world decided to invent, which is kind of illogical, because why would you invent so many things? Why would you invent mathematics and astronomy and architecture and give the credit for that to some imaginary beings? That makes no sense, because we like to take credit for our own work. If I have devised mathematics, then I would like to tell the world that, look, guys, I came up with algebra. I wouldn't say the gods and the sages gave me all this information and I'm just nobody. I'm just relating that information. I wouldn't. So the Kali Yuga is a time when the doorways between the dimensions get locked up. And I believe that once we cross this 2025 threshold and we get into the period of transition, sometime during this period, the doorways will open up again. And so we might be stunned by what we see. And I believe that the recent increase in the sighting of UFOs is an indication that the doorways have started opening up again.
That's interesting. So what would you describe them as, Bibu? How do you recognize the UFOs? Are they other beings, or is it actually something from the spiritual realm that's coming through?
Well, I've been looking into some of the stories and accounts of UFOs in recent times. And there are a couple of things that I noticed. One is a lot of them seem to go underground. They seem to come go into the oceans or into the lakes. And they don't come up for a long time. And they come up later, which tells me that they could be having some kind of underworld base, some kind of an underworld civilization in the crust of the earth, the caverns and the aquifers. I'll come to the aquifers later. And secondly, a lot of these alien sightings, especially in places like Italy or Mexico, they talk about these small dwarf-like beings. They talk about small green men around 3-4 feet high, which reminds me of the dwarfs or the ant people that the Hopis speak about. So I think a lot of these UFOs are not coming from outer space, but they're actually being controlled by underworld civilization, which has gone into hiding at some time at the beginning of the Kali Yuga. And they're now coming out. Maybe Kali Yuga is the time when they hibernate. They take some rest because every living organism needs some rest. The Kali Yuga is their nighttime, that this whole 2700 period is the time that they hibernate. And now they're coming out to check what humans have been doing for the last 2700 years. And they're kind of curious. I think that's why they don't really interact with humans a lot. They're just curious and they're roaming around and seeing what's actually going on. And some of the accounts that I have read, especially coming from Mesoamerica, and this is a very nice writer who went to the indigenous people of Mesoamerica and spoke to them. They tell them that these aliens or the dwarfs, they've interacted with some of them, and they have told them that our world is headed towards a very dangerous period. And that's basically the message, that world is going to towards a very dangerous period, and a lot of very unfortunate things will happen to the earth in future. They haven't said anything more than that, but this is a very consistent message that that has been received, especially in Mesoamerica, by the indigenous people. So yeah, I think some of these UFOs, in fact, I think a lot of these UFO phenomena is controlled by an underworld civilization, which has blocked itself from us now, and they might become visible more often later on. And then the seven sages. We hear about the seven sages in so many ancient cultures. The Mesopotamians call them the Apkalu. And the Apkalu came out of the Indian Ocean. And they were sent by their god Enki. Enki's domain is in the underground aquifers. They call it the Apsu. Apsu means the aquifers under the world. So they're saying that Enki is a god who lives in the underground aquifers. And that's the place where the sages also live. That's the place from where they come out, which is why they also depict their sages as human fish hybrids. You might have seen the pictures of one who was one of the earliest sages. He looks his body is like that of a fish, but then you have the face, and above the face is the head of the fish, but below you have human feet. So it's like a hybrid of a human and a fish. And they call them.
Sounds a little bit like Dagon, the Babylonian.
Yeah. God. Yeah, that's the other name. That's the other name, Dagon. And Oannes was the Greek name. And I forgot the Mesopotamian name for them. And so they're depicted as human fish hybrid. And they say that they used to come out of the Indian Ocean. And they used to come up during the daytime. They instructed the people in all the kinds of arts and skills of civilization. And they didn't take any food during the daytime, and at nighttime they used to dive back into the ocean and disappear. So it's not as if the Apkalu were kind of priests who were dressed up in a fish cloak. That's what some people say, but that's not what Berossus wrote about. He said that the Babylonians actually believe that these are human fish hybrids that live in the water. They were sent by their god who lives in the underground aquifers. They come up from time to time to pass on the arts and skills of civilization to the people. And Berossus even said that everything that the Babylonians knew was given to them by the seven sages, and nothing had been invented since the time that the seven sages had passed on this tradition during the Golden Age. So from the Golden Age till the time of Berossus, which is around 300 BCE, they apparently had not invented anything new, and they were just carrying on with the tradition that had been given to them. And this is the same kind of story that comes up in India, in among the aborigines of Australia, among the some of the Native American tribes, about the gods and the sages passing on the wisdom and the skills and then disappearing.
Yeah, and for listeners who want to see a modern representation of Dagon the Fish God, look at our Pope. Well, not my Pope and not your Pope, but look at the Vatican's Pope. He wears the mitre on his head, which is actually in the shape of a fish mouth. And that's been known for a long time. I think it was written about, I think it was Jordan Maxwell's book where I first read it years and years ago. And I saw it and I couldn't not see it then. It looks like a giant fish on his head.
Yeah. And also this fish Apkallu, they also depicted the Apkallu or the sages in the form of human bird hybrids. So some of them have the face of a vulture or an eagle and the wings of an eagle, but their body is like that of a human. And they carry these bags. And those are not actually bags. In Akkadian, they're called buckets, ritual buckets for carrying water. And they have this pine cone in the other hand. So this water is supposed to be invested with some kind of spiritual power. And they dip that pine cone in the water and they kind of sprinkle that water. And that is what restores fertility, or it heals people. That was one of the main things that the seven sages used to do. They used to heal people from the diseases simply by sprinkling some water. And this is the tradition that you still have in the church of baptism of holy water. We have it in India. We call it Amrita. When the priest he dips some tulsi leaves in the water and he sprinkles it on the congregation. And the Buddhists also have the same tradition of holy water. And I think the holy water is also a tradition that has come down to us from the seven sages.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Bibhu. And it feels like wherever we look across all different traditions now, people are, if they have a representation of the end times, they feel like we are going in towards an end times. And I know people that believe in Christ actually are saying to me more and more, I've met many people the last 2 years, 3 years actually, who believe we are now in the end times. And I did a show all about the end times with my friend Rick Moon, who's a born again Christian. He was talking about end times. So I'd love to talk to you about that in part two a little bit more, to see how you understand it, Bibhu, to see if there is a confluence between these different traditions that we're all heading towards the same omega point where we're going to have the unraveling, I guess, of the current system. That's what it sounds like to me, like the current system that I look around when I go outside and I see capitalism that's become crony capitalism, that's just become out and out corporate greed. And I see the massive inequality across the world, which is wrong. And I see people that have millions of acres of land and people who don't have any land. And it's so imbalanced that all of that seems to me like it's going to be torn away. So although there is a cataclysm there, which I really want to talk about in part two, it does also seem like there's some hope too, like it's going to reset things, but not in the way they talk about a reset. This is going to be nature's reset. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's always a nature's reset. And you know, the billionaires might build a lot of bunkers, but I can assure you that none of them are going to make it across to the new yuga, because that's not how it happens. It's only the people who are meant to go into the new yuga, those who are selected for survival, those who are worthy of the new yuga, they are the ones who are going to pass on to the new yuga. So you can be scared, but if you make yourself worthy, then you're going to survive. That's how I look at it. And if you're not worthy, why would you want to go to the higher yoga and ruin the party for others? I mean, let the others who are deserving go there. And if you're not deserving, you can go on, move on. You know, you can go on to afterlife, which, as we all know from the NDE accounts, that everybody goes to the light in the afterworld. So you can spend some time in the afterworld. And then when you reincarnate again, you're going to reincarnate in a higher yoga. So it's win-win either way. Either you survive and you move into this new age of light and peace and bliss, or you don't survive spend some time in the after other world, and you come back and you reincarnate in a higher level. So from my perspective, it's all win-win. But if you are too attached to the material world right now, and if you think that, you know, my house is all that I have, or my car is all that I have, I want to carry it all with me to the new yoga, then it's not going to happen that way. So it depends on your state of consciousness. I think this unfolding will happen. I think the effect of this unfolding will depend on your state of consciousness. If you're ready for it, then it's going to be a great time, actually, because the energetic balance of the planet is going to change. You're going to see some phenomenal cosmic powers in action. You're going to feel a lot of new energies. The interdimensional doorways will open up. So it's going to be a fantastic experience for someone who's ready for it, who wants to experience this. And I think a lot of people who've incarnated at this time have come here to experience this great shift that is going to happen. They have signed up for it. They're not afraid of it. But those who deny that the yugas exist at all, or that there is at all an end time, or there is at all some other dimensions, or there's at all consciousness fluctuation. If you deny the wisdom of the ancients, if you don't give them any value, and if you think this material world is all that you have, then this transition is going to be very difficult and painful for you. And that's not something that anybody can help you with.
Wow, that's a great way to end part one, Bibhu. So essentially, listeners, what we're talking about here is that it's a spiritual solution. It's about getting yourself right with God, with your creator, with creation itself, living in a just way with principles, building real community based on those foundational principles of goodwill. And that is what we'll see you through. And it doesn't matter, Bibhu, if I build a bunker. That's not going to save me. What's going to save me is my right action. And that's what I've thought all along. So I'm really glad that you've said that. And that's a great place to leave part one. And in part two, listeners, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the yoga cycle. We're going to be following on from this fantastic introduction, but talking about it in a more in-depth way. I'd love to get into the spiritual side of it more, Bibhu, to find out how you're preparing for that and how people might go about engaging in that. I'd also like to talk a little bit more about how these transitions look like and what we should expect. And also about that date, you mentioned next year. So I'd love to find out what actually happens on that date. Do we prepare for that date? Is there something that we should be doing now? So thank you so much for your time, Bibhu. Please tell listeners where they can find your book. I really advise listeners to get this one. Even if you're skeptical of this one, cycles to me, Bibhu, are the most important things. They have such powerful predictive capacities. And although it might not be exactly like we're laying out here, I think we can all attest to the fact that we are living through some big changes, and you've got some important pieces of the puzzle that I've not seen before in the West. So that's why I really appreciate you coming on the show. So where can listeners find you and your work, Bibhu?
My book is called Yoga Shift, and you can find it on Amazon. You get a Kindle version or a paperback version. And my website is www.bibhudevmishra.com, BIBHUDEVMISRA.com. And I have a lot of articles there. One of the initial articles that I had written about the yoga cycle was way back in 2012. And that was when I had laid out this new formulation of the yoga cycle. And I said that the Kali Yuga is going to end in 2025. But back then, I didn't have an idea that one day I'm going to end up writing a book about it. Because I thought, okay, everything that I knew I have said in this article. But then I was wrong, because over time, I started to find out a lot of information that supported my original thesis. And also found out a lot of information to tie in some of the loose ends. I didn't have answers to a lot of questions back then. But in this book, I have brought in a lot of new perspectives, a lot of new research, which kind of ties up all the loose ends. So if you read the book, you'll get a good picture, a good overall picture of the entire yoga cycle. And I've used a lot of scientific evidence to back up whatever I've stated in the book. So I think if you are an open-minded person in quest of the truth, I think you'll enjoy reading the book.
Okay, thank you so much one more time, Bibhu, and I look forward to part two.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for part number one, everyone, but you definitely don't want to miss part number two. In it, we get into the specifics of what we're going to be facing. And if Bibhu's right, and I absolutely agree with him in terms of the cycles and the cataclysms, you know, every religion and civilization has literally told us about this very cycle and warned us that we have to get ready for it. But our elites, as they call themselves, have hidden it from us. And in my opinion, that's because they have been weaponizing these natural cycles and trying to control them for power. But I absolutely don't think they can control these cycles. And in part two, we discuss that and we take this one much further. I get Bibhu's opinion on what he thinks is going to occur once the transition period fully gets in swing next year, what date it begins precisely, how this will manifest in things like the financial markets and where in the world will be most at risk. And of course, we talk about the actionable steps that we need to be taking personally and spiritually in order to survive the transition. But time, of course, is running out on that one. So I think we have to take this one seriously, because whether it's next year or whether it's in 5 years or 10 years, many people I'm speaking to right now are telling me the same thing. They feel something is happening in the world, something big. And you know, all of the cycles that I look at in finance, whether it's the Kondratiev wave theory, whether it's the debt cycle, or whether I look at other cycles to do with the solar cycle or cycles of empire rise and fall, all of them are actually lining up and telling me the same thing, that something massive is coming. And this cycle, the big one, actually explains what that is. Also, I would urge all listeners to buy Bibu's book. It's a fantastic piece of research. You can find it on Amazon. Just search for Yuga Shift. And the author's name, of course, is Bibu, B-I-B-H-U, Dev Misra. In closing, I hope you're all well, healthy and happy. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see each and every one of you next week for episode number 55.
What you are basic. Deep, deep down, far, far in, is simply the fabric and structure of existence itself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
Honestly expressing yourself.
Peace for all men and women, for all men and women, for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.
The fabric and structure of existence.
Not merely peace in our time, peace in all time.